that in particular bring together Christian Zionist legislators from different countries. So it's definitely a worldwide movement, but Hagi is probably the world's foremost and most well-known Christian Zionist, in part because of his decades-long preaching on the question, but also because of his founding of Kufi in 2006.
Sarah Posner, we want to thank you for being with us, author of Unholy, How White Christian Nationalists Powered the Trump Presidency and the Devastating Legacy They Left Behind. And thank you to Rabbi Alyssa Wise of Rabbis for Ceasefire and former co-executive director of Jewish Voice for Peace. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
KBOO Portland.
Dr. Zom's Stereo Obscura. Offbeat sounds for talented listeners. Broadcasts every other Wednesday at 10 p.m.
There was heaven and there was earth.
Después de esa pieza, vamos a escuchar una comunicación simpática y cruel con alguien.
That's Dr. Zom's Stereo Obscura. Every other Wednesday from 10 to midnight, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Portland Folk Music Society Concert Series, which continues Saturday, November 18th with Hubby Jenkins. A live concert of old-time American music following African-American influence in America's traditional music forms. That's Hubby Jenkins on Saturday, November 18th at 7:30 p.m. at the Reedwood Friends Church in Southeast Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland teachers revise their proposal to the district.
An Idaho judge issues an arrest warrant for far-right activist Ammon Bundy.
And Oregonians await a Harney County court decision on gun control.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, November 15th, 2023. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Reed Johnson. Today marks the ninth day that Portland teachers have been out on strike and students have been out of class. But things may be looking up for a resolution. Negotiations to end the Portland teachers' strike began again with a revised proposal from the teachers' union. The changes, most notably on the issue of class size, could save as much as $120 million. Funding for the proposals has been the chief sticking point in negotiations. The union's new proposal drops a hard cap on class size, proposing a committee at each school to set class size. The committee would be called upon to decide whether a student could be added to a class scheduled to be over a certain threshold. That softening on class size caps cuts the cost down, since hard caps would mean hiring more teachers. The teachers' union estimates that it would cost just $6 million to hire between 30 and 40 more teachers across the district. The union's new offer also drops its request about planning time in middle schools. Bargaining will resume tomorrow. Portland's unionized teachers have national supporters. Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders and United Auto Workers President Sean Fain both voiced their support for the teacher strike.
An Idaho county judge issued a $250,000 warrant for the arrest of Ammon Bundy after he failed to appear at court. Bundy is an infamous anti-government activist who gained international notoriety for leading an armed takeover of the Malheurs National Wildlife Refuge headquarters in early 2016. In July of this year, Ada County District Court Judge Nancy Baskin ordered Bundy to pay $52 million in compensatory and punitive damages stemming from protests of a Boise, Idaho hospital he had co-organized. The hospital, St. Luke's Medical Center, had been housing the grandchild of Bundy's friend after authorities took the child into custody because of concerns for its well-being. Bundy's protest shut down the downtown hospital campus and forced ambulances to reroute. Reports also described armed protesters attempting to forcibly enter the locked hospital. A resulting trial found Bundy and members of his People's Rights Network guilty after 10 days of deliberation. Bundy has since then failed to appear in court to face these charges. In an email to Judge Baskin, Bundy announced his intention to skip all future hearings, writing, quote, "I have much more important matters to attend to," end quote.
Oregonians await the decision of a Harney County Circuit Court judge on whether Measure 114, the gun control measure, can go into effect. Judge Robert Roscio says he will issue his opinion no later than November 22nd. The law would require permits in order to buy guns, plus gun owners would have to complete a gun safety training. It would also limit gun magazines to a maximum of 10 rounds. It was passed by voters in November 2022, but Judge Roscio issued a temporary restraining order last December, preventing it from taking effect. Gun groups in Harney County challenged the law, saying it violated their Second Amendment rights. The FBI has agreed to allow Oregon to access their criminal history data for a limited time if Measure 114 should take effect after the ruling. The ruling is less than a week away now, and this comes as a new study examines the far-reaching impacts of gun violence on children. Alex Gonzalez has the details in Arizona.
While mass shootings get widespread media attention, shootings can take place in various locations, including inside homes. A new study looks at the impacts children and adolescent survivors of gun violence face after being shot. The study found a year after being shot, younger survivors experienced higher rates of pain disorders, psychiatric disorders, and an almost 150% increase in substance use disorders. Kelly Drain is the research director with the Giffords Law Center. She says gun violence can have devastating effects on children and their families.
One study found that they actually earn less money as adults if they have experienced gun violence as a child, just because they kind of make choices and have a harder time learning in school, and it impacts the kinds of careers that they have later in life.
Drain says it's important to note that the toll gun violence has on children doesn't stop with the bullet, but continues on and can last for generations. Studies and experts recommend enacting extreme risk laws to block those who pose a danger to themselves or others from obtaining a firearm. Additionally, secure storage laws would require people to store guns safely and prevent unsupervised access. Drain recognizes gun rights can be a very polarizing topic across the United States, but adds there is a consensus that no one should feel afraid to go to the grocery store or fear their child might hurt themselves in a home where a firearm is present. She adds people want safe communities and a majority support what she calls common sense gun safety policies. Drain says she's hopeful things will improve.
We're at a really interesting inflection point in our country. Gun violence is at this really severe crisis point, but we also are seeing more states than ever really step up and pass the kind of laws that are necessary to combat this crisis. That's not to say that we don't need more or that we're doing enough, but I think we are definitely seeing signs of progress.
Drain says as elections approach, she encourages voters to get educated on where candidates stand on the issue and suggests Arizonans build what she calls a safer culture around firearms while preserving the Second Amendment right by using secure firearm storage practices. For Arizona News Connection, I'm Alex Gonzalez.
The federal government won't shut down on Friday. House Speaker Mike Johnson's stopgap spending measure passed yesterday, garnering more votes from Democrats than Republicans, 209 to 127. 6 weeks ago, before he became Speaker of the House, Johnson voted against a budget proposal nearly identical to the one he brought forth this week. The approved resolution temporarily maintains funding at levels set in 2022, without adding any policy-related add-ons or restrictions. It staggers the deadlines for funding government agencies, with some spending expiring on January 19th and the rest on February 2nd. The Senate is expected to approve the resolution as early as tomorrow morning.
As was just stated, the House passes a spending bill to avert government shutdown. Georgia prosecutors also seek a protective order after a Trump election leak. And a GOP senator challenges a union leader to a brawl during committee hearing. With more on the story, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2023 Tots.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
And I want to cut spending right now, and I would like to put policy writers on this. But when you have a three-vote majority, we don't have the votes to be able to advance that.
A major victory for Speaker Mike Johnson. The House Tuesday passed a short-term funding bill to avoid a government shutdown. It now heads to the Senate without the deep spending cuts hardline Republicans want. The bill passed with more Democratic votes than Republican, including that of Jared Moskowitz, who cited GOP dysfunction.
What's unclear to me is whether there'll be a motion to vacate the Speaker after a bunch of Democrats vote to keep the government open, because that's what happened to Speaker McCarthy.
Also Tuesday, a discussion between Moskowitz and Kentucky Republican James Comer became heated. The Florida Democrat mocked the House Oversight Chair, and Comer responded by saying Moskowitz looked like a smurf. The Democrat immediately used that in a fundraising appeal. Tempers ran high in several corners of the Capitol. During a Senate committee hearing, Oklahoma's Mark Wayne Mullen stood and challenged Teamsters leader Sean O'Brien to a fight.
Sir, this is a time, this is a place. If you want to run your mouth, we can be two consenting adults. We can finish it here.
Okay, that's fine. Perfect.
You want to do it now?
I'd love to do it right now.
Well, stand your butt up then.
You stand your butt up.
Oh, hold on. Big guy. Oh, stop it.
Mullen alleges he was trying to expose O'Brien as a thug. This spring, O'Brien called Mullen a greedy CEO on social media. Tennessee Congressman Tim Burchett is accusing former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy of elbowing him in the kidney. Burchett is one of the Republicans who voted to oust McCarthy. McCarthy denies the incident. The Senate Rules Committee voted along party lines to let Majority Leader Chuck Schumer move forward 350 military promotions held up by Republican Senator Tommy Tuberville. Schumer says Tuberville is jeopardizing the military.
Patience is wearing thin with Senator Tuberville on both sides of the aisle. I strongly support this resolution to overcome these military holds.
Tuberville has blocked military appointments for 9 months over a Pentagon abortion policy. A supporter of Palestinians, Massachusetts Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley, is condemning both Islamophobia and anti-Semitism on college campuses.
Whether you wear a yarmulke or a hijab, you have a right to show up as your authentic self without fear or discrimination.
Saying leaks in the 2020 election subversion case aim to intimidate witnesses. Fulton County, Georgia prosecutor Fannie Willis is asking the court to protect them. ABC News aired testimony from Donald Trump's former lawyer, Jenna Ellis, recounting when a Trump aide told her the former president would refuse to leave the White House.
He said the boss is not going to leave under any circumstances. We are just going to stay in power. And I said to him, well, it doesn't quite work that way, you realize. And he said, we don't care.
I'm Alex Gonzalez.
Earlier this year, the U.S. Surgeon General issued a warning about the effects of social media use on youth mental health. Advocates are pressing Congress for reforms to hold social media companies accountable. Nadia Ramlagan has the story.
Pressure is mounting on lawmakers to hold social media companies accountable for algorithms and other practices that have been linked to eating disorders, depression, and other serious mental health issues in adolescents and teens. After a second Facebook, now called Meta, whistleblower recently testified in Congress, advocates are once again asking Congress to pass the Kids Online Safety Act. The bipartisan bill would establish basic safeguards to protect kids on social media and provide families with tools and transparency to handle online threats. Facebook whistleblower Francis Haugen says parents have been blindsided, and many blame themselves for their child's self-harm or suicide.
One of the things that I think is really tragic is how we've left parents alone to deal with these hundreds of billions of dollar companies to keep their kids safe.
According to the Children's Defense Fund, more than 359,000 kids live in West Virginia, and Haugen says the majority use social media on a daily basis. The CDC says nationwide, suicide rates for kids and young adults have jumped by more than 60% since 2007. Haugen explains the legislation would allow teens and parents to have more control over their social media use, including the algorithms that drive what types of content a user sees.
Imagine something as simple as having the right to reset your algorithms. Right now, kids have to decide between their past, you know, all their posts, all their friends, and being stuck in rabbit holes that threaten their futures.
One poll from the group Citizen Data finds 76% of Americans believe social media companies have a responsibility to design their platforms in a way that protects children's mental health, even if it limits profits. The social media companies say they are doing what it can to protect kids. This is Nadia Ramlagan.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott is expected to sign a bill that would make crossing into the state without documentation a crime. Yesterday, the Texas House passed SB 4, which makes entering Texas from another country without papers a misdemeanor punishable by up to 2 years in prison. The law also requires a state judge to order a person to return to the country they crossed from in lieu of prosecution. If a person refuses to return, they could face a felony charge and up to 20 years in prison. The bill also gives Texas officers the ability to arrest anyone who they believe has crossed into the state illegally. The Texas Civil Rights Project says the bill was, quote, creating an entirely new, separate, unequal immigration system in the U.S. and allowed police to, quote, be both judge and jury to determine a person's right to stay in the United States.
On Thursday, the Multnomah County Community Design Advisory Group will hold a public meeting on the future replacement of the Burnside Bridge. The meeting will be in the Multnomah County Boardroom on Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard from 5:30 until 8 p.m. Multnomah County is preparing to upgrade the Burnside Bridge in order to get it ready for a major earthquake. As of now, it's expected that none of Portland's downtown Willamette River bridges would be usable after a major Cascadia Subduction Zone earthquake. The Community Design Advisory Group is made up of 22 community members who provide input to the Burnside project team on bridge colors, materials, lighting, and the shape of certain bridge features. They will meet regularly throughout the design phase. There is also an option to join the meeting virtually by clicking a link on the Community Design Advisory Group webpage. Demolition and construction for the project are supposed to start in mid-2026.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an interview with Street Roots reporter Jeremiah Hayden on two articles he has written this week. They tackle Portland's so-called daytime camping ban and the court case against it, as well as the city's plans for alternative shelter sites. At 6, it's special programming by Indigenous and Native American creators. At 6:30 p.m., it's Free Culture Radio. And then at 7, Culture in Motion with Mike Crenshaw. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with lows in the upper 30s. Tomorrow's weather, partly cloudy with a high at 54. Today in history, in 1969, hundreds of thousands marched in Washington in peaceful demonstration against the Vietnam War. And we have two quotes for the day. The first of our quotes is from American cultural anthropologist Margaret Mead, who died on this day in 1978. Mead said, quote, "It is utterly false and cruelly arbitrary to put all the play and learning into childhood, all the work into middle age, and all the regret into old age," end quote. And by way of explaining our mid-head music, our second quote is from American wrestler Macho Man Randy Savage, who said, quote, "I'm the tower of power, too sweet to be sour. I'm funky like a monkey, sky is the limit, and space is the place," end quote.
Broadband access was a key concern for speakers at the National Congress of American Indians Conference this week. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Broadband access is a top concern among many tribal citizens across the country. The topic was addressed at the National Congress of American Indians Annual Convention Tuesday in New Orleans. As Rhonda Lavaldo reports, attendees also discussed technology and data collected, managed, and applied responsibly in Indian country.
Indigenous state of sovereignty and governance was a packed session. The session talked about how tribes could model the Gila River Indian community. The tribe located in Arizona started its own telecom company. Governor Stephen Roe Lewis talked about how he was impressed by seeing his own people being taught about the telecom industry and its economic impact, which he says can be helpful for other nations.
This is a moment that could be a digital movement.
across Indian country. And it's important that tribes and tribal leaders take advantage of this moment.
Former Federal Communications Commission Chief of the Office of Native Affairs and Policy, Jeff Blackwell, talked about the importance of digital sovereignty for tribal nations.
You are preparing yourself to assert your sovereignty in the cyber world, that you are beginning to understand, to address all of these areas, network, governance, participation, authority.
Blackwell was recently announced as NCAI Chief of Staff and told the audience NCAI would provide an outlet for tribes to get connected with ways to navigate how to get started with digital sovereignty. And federal funding may also be a way for tribes to improve access to broadband. This is Rhonda Lavaldo for National Native News.
More than $9 million has been approved for a project incorporating Native American management practices for oak habitat restoration in Oregon. As KLCC's Brian Bull reports, this includes cultural burns.
The USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service awarded the money, which will go to the Oregon Agricultural Trust and its partners. Kavoka Jackson is a program manager for the Eco Studies Institute, one of the partners. She's done controlled fire operations based on how indigenous people did for ages, blending ancient practice with modern methods.
Use of cultural fire, traditional fire on the landscape, which usually entails people who are trained or have the wildfire qualifications. That usually entails fire trucks or water resources, the use of drip torches, other hand tools.
The project also seeks to permanently protect designated oak savannas and woodlands and give Native Americans access to them for cultural use and environmental stewardship. The priority area for this project are Lane and Linn counties. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
U.S. Senator Mark Wayne Mullen made headlines after a heated confrontation with a witness during a hearing about unions Tuesday in the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee. The senator from Oklahoma challenged Sean O'Brien, the president of Teamsters, to a fight.
Sir, this is a time, this is a place. If you want to run your mouth, we can be two consenting adults. We can finish it here.
Okay, that's fine. Perfect.
You want to do it now?
I'd love to do it right now.
Well, stand your butt up then.
You stand your butt up.
Oh, hold on. Oh, stop it.
Is that your solution every problem?
No, no, sit down. Sit down. Okay. You know, you're a United States senator. Sit down.
Active.
Oh, okay. Sit down, please.
All right. The exchange happened after Mullen held up several pieces of paper reading critical tweets from O'Brien made at the senator. The two threw insults at each other for several minutes as Senator Bernie Sanders, chair of the committee, tried to calm the situation and then proceeded to move the hearing forward. Mullen, an enrolled member of the Cherokee Nation and first Native American to serve in the Senate in nearly two decades, is a former MMA fighter and challenged O'Brien to a charity match next year. In an interview with Fox News, Mullen defended his action, saying he's a guy from Oklahoma and was responding to O'Brien. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Climate change could make air travel even worse, and I suppose vice versa. Floods, heat waves, and storm are causing turbulence and delays. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Flight delays and misconnections can turn a joyful holiday trip into a stressful fiasco. And these headaches may become more common as floods, heat waves, and storms grow more extreme. Paul Williams is a professor of atmospheric science at the University of Reading in the UK.
Climate change has many potential consequences for the future of flying.
For example, in September, heavy rain caused hundreds of delays and cancellations in New York City airports. At LaGuardia, a terminal flooded, forcing travelers to wade through inches of water. And extreme heat can make it harder for planes to take off, because hotter air is less dense, which reduces the aircraft's lift. Todd Smith, a former commercial pilot, says that to compensate, planes sometimes need to shed weight before taking off.
Passengers are having to be offloaded or baggage, etc., so that the aircraft is within performance limits.
He worries that airlines are not doing enough to plan and prepare for these sorts of climate-related risks.
So far, I think the industry hasn't fully accepted this reality and that it's set to get worse.
So more passengers may be stuck waiting around at airports in a warming world. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
California has just launched its first statewide guaranteed income program. To start, it will benefit 300 young people who are aging out of the foster care system to help them jumpstart their lives. Suzanne Potter speaks with the state senator who authored the bill establishing the program.
About 300 young adults leaving foster care in California will now receive a monthly check to help them make ends meet, part of the state's first guaranteed income program. Some 150 people in Ventura will receive $1,000 a month, and another 150 in San Francisco will receive $1,200 a month with no strings attached. State Senator Dave Cortese of San Jose, who wrote the bill to launch the program, says paternalistic programs that restrict the aid to cover only food or rent haven't worked in the past.
People in poverty need to be empowered, just like the rest of us, to make their own decisions. It really should be up to them to decide whether they need food, a warm coat, or rent. These aren't decisions that the state should be making. These are decisions that individuals should be making.
Opponents worry that people receiving unrestricted income could waste it on luxuries, but post-analysis of pilot programs in Stockton and Santa Clara County disprove that concern. This is the first statewide universal basic income program. There are also about 200 local programs now operating across California. Cortese says these types of programs reduce homelessness and end up saving the state money in the long run.
We have significant economic disparity issues in the state, and this gets the kind of outcomes that we're looking for in terms of giving people a leg up and keeping them out of the systems that cost us a lot of money, incarceration, like mental health and so forth.
Cortese says he hopes to secure funding next year for a similar proposal called the California Success, Opportunity, and Academic Resilience, or SOAR program, which would give a five-month stipend to the 15,000 homeless kids who exit California high schools each year. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
People are shopping for the holidays, and scammers know it. Some tips can help protect people from falling for the most common tricks thieves use. Eric Tagedoff has more.
The holiday gift buying season is here, and that means people need to stay vigilant so they don't fall victim to scams. Thieves take advantage of the season with a variety of cons, whether it's to steal money or personal identity information. Kay Tomlinson is an AARP Fraud Watch Network volunteer with AARP Washington. She says online gift buying is popular, but people should be careful.
We should really be suspicious of any online offer that offers such a deep discount over what other retailers offer. Really, we should be doing our online shopping with trusted retailers that we know.
Washingtonians lost more than $240 million to online scams last year, 11th highest in the nation, according to the FBI's 2022 Internet Crime Report. Tomlinson says package scams also are prevalent this time of year, with people getting texts claiming to be from delivery companies like UPS or FedEx.
If you get one of these texts, type in the web address in your browser. Use an app if that's an option. Contact the shipping company directly by a number that you know is valid, not one provided by the text.
Tomlinson says gift card scams are also common, and she suggests people buy gift cards online from reputable dealers. Folks should also research charities before they give. Tomlinson says she doesn't want to take the joy out of the gift-giving season, but people need to protect themselves.
You don't like to feel like you're suspicious all the time, but when you get that little voice in the back of your head, it's usually a good idea to listen to it, especially during the holiday season.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
An elephant and an eastern black rhinoceros at the Oregon Zoo are both pregnant. The rhinoceros, Josie, is expected to give birth in the next couple of months after its 16-month pregnancy. But the elephant calf won't be born until 2025 due to the nearly two-year-long gestation period for elephants. Rose, too, is a 29-year-old Asian elephant, and this is her third pregnancy. The black rhinoceros is one of the most endangered animals in the world. 96% of their wild population has been lost to poaching and illegal wildlife trade.
It's Wednesday, and that means a visit from KBOO News poet Dan Raphael, who needs his new streaming channel.
I wish this was mid-season for the news, but I fear we're just in the first act. Testimony has leaked in one Trump trial, probably by one of his lawyers, while in another trial the judge gave up getting a testifying Trump to answer the question. And his kids have been making a lot of money running a business they swear they know nothing about. Gaza just gets crueler. Israel's scorched earth policy in what's already desert. Yes, Hamas is hiding in plain sight in public places where the vast majority are just trying to not get shot before they can get a drink of water. In Washington, Speaker Johnson got more Democrat than Republican votes to counterbalance Congress's anti-government extremists and keep the government from shutting down on Friday, but they'll get to do this again in a couple months. Portland's political pandemonium won't even premiere till next year. Maybe it's time to get away from the screens and start my own mini-series, to step outside and binge a season of life. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News for Wednesday, November 15th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael, Chris Gao, Sam Bowman, Jasmine Moneymaker, and Reed Johnson. Their producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Alex Gonzalez, Eric Tegetoff, Suzanne Potter, Nadia Ramlagan, and Antonia Gonzalez. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Reed Johnson. All of our KABU programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members, great people like you. If you're not a member and would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KABU News in Depth.
KABU News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KABU News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm here with Jeremiah Hayden, reporter at Street Roots, and we're